there happens to be probably one of the Mekoros that may have been a good candidate for the first Mar Mukum this morning. I didn't put it on the list because it's already been on the list, maybe more than once. And that's essentially, it could have been kind of a wormhole between the first parak and Bishul, which Bishul is largely in the third parak, but there are a lot of other places in Shabbos and elsewhere, as you've seen, where Bishul is laid out a little bit, and that's where we're going to have to take some trips back and forth in order to see it. But one of the most relevant Makoros is really a Gemara that we saw relatively recently on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, so I didn't put on the Mar Mukum list again. But it's a good bridge to use from Hotzah to Bishul in terms of figuring out just what Bishul is all about. So before we start that, we start any new malacha, I think it's a useful exercise, as we've seen, to ask, just try to figure out what do the words mean. If there is a malacha called Bishul, how would you translate that? You want to take a stab at it? Yes, sir.
Cooking.
Cooking. Okay, what does cooking mean? I know that it's very good for the world, but I have very little to do with it.
You're using a heat source to change the chemical makeup of a food from raw to not raw.
Ah, okay, so that's a lot of words. So are all those words crucial? So from raw to not raw, what does raw mean?
Inedible.
Ah, that's a good one. Okay, so making something that was inedible, edible through heat. Okay, that's close to a definite working definition. Jonathan?
Improving with heat.
Improving with heat. Okay, so you want to disagree with what Ari said.
I don't want to limit it to food, necessarily.
Okay, you don't want to limit it to food. Okay, that's something we'll have to see. And do you want to say that you're doing it just to remove food from the equation, or to say that improving as opposed to the absolute flip from inedible to edible?
I think going from inedible to edible with foods is improving.
Right, but it's saying the difference between the two words is that improving suggests that any quantitative improvement is going
to
be enough.
Right, has to, even if it didn't get to sheer, right, has to get to sheer, has to be considered, has to get to a certain point where it's considered.
But okay. We say in Bishul Acher Bishul, which seems to be, sorry, I'm introducing links.
No, that's okay, but that's part of what we need to figure out, right?
It seems to be that once you already get to the Bishul stage, there's no such thing as Bishul afterwards.
Okay, so what's being touched upon here is, on the one hand, the question of whether this is a food-specific malacha or not. Right? Did you get a chance to see the Rambams? You've seen a little bit, if you've had a chance to see the Rambams on this morning's list. Hopefully tomorrow there'll be a little bit more time. So you'll see that there is what to talk about whether this is a food-specific malacha or not. Also, if you saw the Gemara on Daf and Dalet, you see there's what to talk about just what role exactly does food play. We'll have to figure that out. And the question, we just saw the difference between what Aryeh was saying and what Jonathan was saying, the difference between the word improving and the word making something inedible edible might be a significant difference. And Aryeh is alluding to the fact that we find that there does seem to be certain points of significance where if you don't reach that point of significance, possibly you don't necessarily have the malacha. And if you've already reached that point of significance, maybe you also don't have room for more malacha. So we have to figure out how exactly to use that word. Yosef?
I'm not sure what the Nachmanides is with you, but a bishul after bishul doesn't mean that there's a bishul and a technical term after bishul. It means that logically it's not going to be considered the iser malacha of bishul that we would have considered before. But it could be that that's still part of bishul. There might have ramifications elsewhere.
Okay, I think you're onto something. We may have to get a little bit more specific. So if, on the one hand, if you really don't mean that there is the malacha, if it's outside of a bishul, Acher Bishul context, so then maybe it's not part of the definition of our malacha. I think you mean something, I think you're onto something. We have to figure out exactly how to identify that and how to say that it's something that still has relevance, even if it's not something you're chayav for. So we'll have to figure that out exactly, where there is to glean from that. So, any other stabs? Any other attempts to define what's going on? So part of what hasn't been addressed here, I think we mentioned this a little bit in our Hakdamah to Malachos in general, is that it's not really clear that Bishul really belongs on the list at all. Right? Why should Bishul possibly not be an appropriate candidate for the list of the Malachas?
It wasn't done in the Mishnah.
Oh, so was it or was it not done in the Mishnah?
So,
right. So the truth is actually, I said that really backwards. Really, Bishul actually is the more obvious candidate. It's really Ofer, which is what's mentioned in the Mishnah. That's a little bit more suspect. So, yeah, explain that.
So, I mean, it uses Ofer. And it should use Bishul. Why? Because of the making of the dyes for the curtains or something like that.
Okay.
But that's
many,
not...
Many
or,
colors.
That's like the preparation for the making of the Mishkan. It's like one step removed.
Okay, so there is a Machlokas HaRishonim is what you're, I think, alluding to.
Yeah.
That when we talk about the notion of the Mishkan being the source of the Malachos, so there is a Machlokas what that means. The more intuitive interpretation, I think what most people would guess once they already know that the Mishkan is the source for the Malachos, the more intuitive interpretation is that it comes from what was done in the creation of the Mishkan. So whatever was necessary as part of making the Mishkan, that becomes a Malacha that you're chayav for. Now, if that's the case, so Ofe, the baking slot of this Malacha, which is what's identified in the Mishnah on Ayin Gimel, where all the Malachas are listed, so Ofe doesn't really belong there. And the expression that we have for the first 11 Malachos of Sidur the Pas, also, it's good to have some accompaniment to keep things a little lengthy. So the Sidur the Pas, to call the first... Sorry?
It's calming.
Yes, it is calming.
It allows your mind to be open to
more ideas. So if you say... So if you say that Sidur the Pas refers to the first 11 Malachos, so that itself is interesting because it seems to suggest that bread-making is a part of the Mishkan, and presumably Mishkan, it was a movable, dismantleable structure, but it was a little sturdier than bread, right? So how exactly do you have bread-baking as part of the Mishkan? So there is a view in the Rishonim that when we talk about the Mishkan, we're not only talking about the creation of the Mishkan, we're talking about everything in the Mishkan, what was done in the Mishkan as well. So since for the functioning of the Mishkan, we have the Hakravos HaKarbanos, and we have the Lechem HaPanim as a part of the functioning of the Mishkan, so bread comes into the equation. So in order to include Afia and Sidur HaPas as phrases that are about the Mishkan itself, we have to take this other view of what's called a malacha, and this is discussed at length in the introduction to the Egel Tal, where he suggests it's really a machlokes the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. It's a little difficult because the other interpretation is more intuitive, that it's really the construction of the Mishkan. Philosophically, if we believe that the Mishkan was the ultimate act of creation, and therefore we abstain from creative acts on Shabbos that parallel that which was done for the Mishkan, it's easier to understand why it should be the construction components that are malachos, the things that took place in the Mishkan, the activities that happened after the construction. It's harder to see why that becomes maybe becomes the basis for a malacha. We also mentioned in between that when it comes to baking, to lechem hapanim, so we did see in Chumash here a few weeks ago, it could make the case lechem hapanim is a part of the preparation of the Mishkan. It's a little bit of a stretch, but in any event, so it is a machlokus as to what is the model for baking / cooking in the Mishkan. So either it is the baking of bread, we call afia, or we'll say that no, that's not relevant to the construction, and therefore that's not a malacha. So instead it has to be the bishul hasamamanim, as I referred to, the boiling of vegetables to make dyes so that you could color the various components of the Mishkan, and that it's really not about food. And so right off the bat, the question of whether Bishul is food specific is going to be affected by the question of where does Bishul come from? What is the model for Bishul? Is Bishul about creating dyes? Or is Bishul about baking bread? And the question of how much food is a part of the definition is already going to be affected by that. Okay, so we have some attempt add a basic definition of Malacha Bishul stuff.
According to the internet, everything that was done in the Mishkan, where do you draw the limit? I mean, they also walked in the Mishkan. They also, it's confusing for me.
Correct. So that's where we got our whole first half of the semester from, right? The whole question of Hotzah. So the Gemara, the beginning of Bava Kamma, has the expression, Hach Debe Mishkan Chashiva Karo Le'av, which is a little bit of a question of Girsa's how to read that phrase, but for simplicity's sake, let's say it means that which was in the Mishkan and was important is called an Av.
Okay.
And that's where we really got the whole question in terms of Hotzah, that Hotzah has essentially that question, that you're right, if we want to just look at everything that was done, so we could call all little gestures malachas. So you could say that walking inside the Mishkan was a malacha. So that was really a little bit what the Rishonim were struggling with the whole question of Hotzah, that Hotzah, okay, fine, it had a role in the Mishkan, but how do you know it's significant? And we say it's garua, we say that it's lacking something, and therefore the psukim and the other traditions that we have around Hotzah are coming to fill in that gap. That would seem to be the issue, that it's not enough that it happened in the Mishkan, we have to have some type of indication that it's significant, some type of indication that it's chashuv. But in this case, Bishul is a little easier to see, because in terms of the traditional standard for malacha, that it's got to change something, it's got to affect something. So from that perspective, again, also in terms of the Mishkan, that'll be a little bit our guideline, things that actually affect the change. And again, Hotzah needed help in order to see how it gets in that category. But Bishul doesn't need as much help. Bishul, we can see that something is definitely changing. Or we can taste that something is changing. There's definitely an effect on the world. But part of the complexity, and this is where that valid comes in, is that Bishul does have a semi-unusual structure. And it's a structure, as we saw, we spent a little bit of time on, we saw Daf Dalet, that it does have a similarity to planting, to Zareya, but the similarity is not absolute. Right, what do they have in common, Zareya and Bishul? That they're both, right?
That they have a long span of process.
Yes, except I would say that long is a very subjective term. That there's a time delay involved, but the length may actually be a part of the differentiation between the two, but there's a time gap. That there is an initial action that a human being does, and then sometime later, there is the impact. So both Zareya and Bishul have that structure, but there the similarity starts to dissipate. Right, because after you grant that connection between the two, so what's the difference between Bishul and Zareya beyond that point? Zareya, it really goes to the long part, that Zareya is longer than a Shabbos. So we know that Zareya, not only is there going to be a gap between the human action and the impact, but that both of those can never share a day, can never both happen on Shabbos. And that being the case, we're forced to come up with some type of a complex definition for how Zareya is a malach. Bishul, we don't know that it has to share the same definition. Bishul may share the same kind of structure as Zareya because it has that gap, but it's not forced into the same corner because the time is not as long. And that could have an impact in a couple of ways. And it is largely, likely, inconceivable that a process of Bishul can begin and end on Shabbos. So we don't have the same type of issue that we have with Zareya, but it starts off with a certain parallel. You have this gap, but it's not the same kind of tension to define things exactly in the same way, because it is theoretically possible to have it, very likely possible to have it all take place in the Shabbos. So that's where we find that there are some, really among the Achronim, as we discussed in that context, that there are some who feel it will parallel Zareya exactly, and there are others who will make distinctions between Bishul and Zareya. And one of the questions becomes, once you say that you have an action and you have a result, So then you could pose a general question as to what exactly is the malacha? Is the malacha the human action? Putting the food in the oven, putting the dough in the oven, putting the meat in the oven, whatever it is? Or is the malacha the bringing about of the cooking of the food? And placing it in the oven is simply the first step of that, but ultimately your malacha is the end product. And the major reason to have a doubt about this is that the Gemara on Daf Dalet that we saw, the Gemara tells us the essential chiddush that's very crucial to understanding this process, that it is possible to disrupt cooking in the middle. That if you have something in the oven, if you have bread in the oven, if you have presumably other things as well, the Gemara is talking about bread, but presumably it should apply to any cooked item. So if you stop the process in the middle, there won't be at least an onesh, there won't be a chi of chattas, there won't be a chi of skila. It's possible to stop this process in the middle. So what does that say about how we define what the malacha is?
Are you saying Rishash?
A little bit, we're alluding to it. I'll flesh that in a second.
Okay, so I guess we're probably going to talk about this, but putting in the oven by itself would not be the malacha. It also has to be completed, right?
Right, so clearly, so the Gemara clearly seems to tell us that if it doesn't get completed, you'll be potter. But is that simply a condition? Or is that because you're potter because you didn't do the malacha? The malacha is letting it finish. And then retroactively, we see the guy who put it there is the one who's chayav. So if you recall, as Stefan mentioned, there was, on the one hand, the machlokas between the Rashash and the Minchas Tinoch in terms of the parallel to Zriya, that when it comes to Zriya, so clearly you have to allow for the impact to take place after Shabbos. So the Rashash thought that both Zriya and Bishul work the same way. And that in both cases, you're a chayav for your initial step, putting the seeds in the ground or putting the food in the oven. And the question is, it's on condition that later on it plays out. It's on condition that the effect happens. So with Zriya, it'll happen after Shabbos, and Bishul, it could happen on Shabbos or after Shabbos, whatever it is, but you need that in order for the malacha to take place. And according to the Minchas Tinoch, we don't really compare Bishul and Zriya. They have different structures. And that Bishul, as the Gemara tells us, we can interrupt that in the middle. It is simply not considered to be a malacha until it's finished. And Zriya, you can't interrupt in the middle, because the malacha is defined as simply putting it in the ground. And we said a little bit, we talked about that sugya, but the Acharonim talk about if there is a distinction like the Minchas Tinoch, so why is there a distinction? Why aren't they the same? And the few approaches that you find, one approach you could say is that it's simply a Lashon Bnei Adam impact, that how do we talk about these malachos? That in human language, if somebody says, I planted something, they mean they put it in the ground. And if you ask somebody, few minutes after you put seeds in the ground, you say, plant those seeds. So he doesn't say, yes, I'm planting them right now, and keep talking like that for the next 3 days. He says he planted them. As soon as he put them in the ground, he planted them. But when somebody puts something in the oven, so until it comes out, he'll say, yeah, I'm cooking it right now. I'm baking the bread right now. That he's both linguistically and mentally, he's in the middle of the process until it comes out of the oven. And when it comes to planting, he takes his mind off it and his language off of it once it's ready in the ground.
How did Nechaz Kinnich explain the Gemara? How are you able to stop it?
Because when it comes to Bishul, so you're still involved. So it's not finished until it's finished. So therefore, our Gemara only talks about Bishul. The assumption is that since Bishul and Zriya both have this dual structure, so if you can interrupt Bishul in the middle, which is the Gemara, then presumably you can interrupt Zriya in the middle. And if that's the case, so then you have to figure out how you could ever be chayiv in Zriya, because it never finishes on Shabbos. So The Rosh Hash has his way of explaining that. And the Chasminuch says, I don't have to explain that. Because I don't think they're the same. I think that Zriya works one way, and Bishul works its own way. So when it comes to Zriya, you're finished once you put it in the ground. And when it comes to Bishul, you're not finished until it's over. So that opens up a question as to what exactly is the Maisa HaMalacha with Bishul. Is it putting it in the oven? Or is it the whole package of putting it in the oven and waiting until it comes out? And that itself becomes the act of the Malacha. So what difference would it make? There are a few differences. We'll have to continue to look tomorrow. I apologize for the late start today. But one difference, for example, would be the question of Hasra. The question of when do you issue the Hasra to somebody who's about to violate Bishul. So there is a Yerushalmi about this. The Yerushalmi was on the Maamar Kol, I think, towards the end. The first parak of Shabbos, Yerushalmi says, quotes the view that when you see somebody who has the language a little bit vague, which is part of the point, but when you see somebody who has put a pot on the fire, so you say to that person, Lekisha Yisbashal Kamaichal Ben Drusoy, that when it becomes cooked enough to be edible, Michael Ben Drusoy, we mentioned this recently, Drusoy was a robber, was Zocha through his illicit career to get halachic terminology named after him. Right, must be some kind of discourse we mentioned. You know, doctors get diseases named after him, and Ganovim get malachas named after them, so, or aspects of malachas named after them. So because he was always in a rush, he didn't want to get caught, so he would take his food when it was at the minimal level of cooking. He made one of these Ganovim who would cook his food in people's houses. Wait till the guy comes home and take it out. So, if that's the case, so he defines the minimum of a shear bishul. That's machlokas rishonim, whether that means halfway cooked or a third of the way cooked, but that's the point where you become chayv. So, it says, Dear Shalmi, you should say to the person, again, the language is a little vague, so let's translate it vaguely, say to the guy, when it reaches Michael ben Jusai, asr. So, what are those words mean? So the Karban Ha'eda, commentary on the Yerushalmi, the Karban Ha'eda says it means that when the guy is putting the food in the oven, you should tell them, you should know that if you're going to leave it there until it hits Michael Ben Drusai, you will have committed an Aveira, which in a way then parallels our Gemara here, right? That if you let the pot stay in the tonner, then it gets there till the end. If it stays there till the end, then you will have become chai. Rabbi Yoliav Silverman of our Kolo Rus has a very nice sefer called The Nation of Nefesh. So he has an essay about this question. And he suggests that you could also read the Yerushalmi a different way. And maybe the Yerushalmi means that you tell the person when you see it's going to hit Michael Ben Drusai, then you could say, Asr. That the Hasra comes not before he puts it in, but the Hasra comes once it's about to reach that stage of Chiyuv. And he suggests that perhaps there is room for the Safek, essentially based on this question, that what is the Maisa HaMalacha? Is the Maisa HaMalacha putting it in? And therefore the Hasra is given beforehand, with the instruction that if it goes all the way through till cooking, you're going to be Chayiv. Or is the Maisa HaMalacha once it cooks? I think for various reasons, the more mistaber definition, the more mistaber scenario is the first one. That is Maisa Avera physically, presumably is the time for Hasra, and presumably the Gemara means that before he's putting it in, you're going to be Chayav. There's a raya from Tosfos in our original sukkah that that's true. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Right, Tosfos on Daf Daled raises an issue. Yeah, what issue that's relevant to this question? Do you recall?
Yeah, because the malach is being—it's not done. It's already going, so it's already in the first place. Nothing's been done, and the shabbos has already been done.
Well, Tosfos also raises the concern of Hasra's suffix.
Oh,
right. Tosfos says that if our Gemara implies on Daf Daled, keep calling it our Gemara until we officially switch past this source. So. Our Gemara in Daf Daled says that you could be you could be absolved of the chiyuv by taking it out in the middle. So doesn't that create a hasra suffix? How is the person ever going to get hasra if the hasra is always going to be ambiguous? Because you don't know that the malacha is actually going to happen because it could be interrupted in the middle. That itself, that position of Tosus was really a big chiddush. We discussed a little bit at the time. Because to say that malacha is in doubt, just because there might be some possibility of saving oneself from the onesh afterwards, you don't really have to say that way. It's probably the less compelling way to say things. Presumably, the action of the malacha is not so in doubt, is not so much of a safek. It's just that there happens to be a possibility of retroactively removing the chiyuv. But the hasra presumably is addressed to the ma'isa ha'iser, and the ma'isa ha'iser is not so much in safek. So that whole tosis is interesting. But what's implicit in tosis is that the hasra is happening at the beginning. And for a number of reasons, that probably makes more sense. But there is room to have this question as to what exactly should be the point of hasra, the nekuda of hasra, and that might all go to a question that could be asked as to what exactly is the malacha of bishul. There are a few more points that may come out from this, so we'll have to really already a little bit over time. Again, I apologize for the delayed start. It's Be'ez Hashem tomorrow, so we'll make sure the mamakomos go out to everyone. And hopefully we'll be able to get at least a good introduction down.